Are we anybody on the line?
Working on that.
Okay, will you let me know so that we can check who's actually there? And I think we're a little loud and echoey here. That's better? Okay. I've put up the agenda. We've covered the item that we were supposed to cover between 10 and 10:50, identification of common variant issues. But I think we've also covered a lot of the next session, which is identification of unique variant issues in the one table. Andrew, do you agree?
I do. And I mean, we were going to use the same basic taxonomy for both. So.
Yes. Okay. So the next session that is due to start now is the identification of other variant-related issues. Andrew, over to you. What is it you have in mind here? And
it's me.
Oh, it's you. Sorry. Thank you. It's not you, Andrew. Thank you. Francisco, what have you got in mind, and can you...
Yes, can you show what is in the room?
So how do I do this?
Hello, this is Francisco. So this session is about issues that are not variants, but come up from the variants discussion. These issues that I'm going to present next appear in one or more of the case study reports. The idea here is to identify and agree on these issues, and we identified 10 issues approximately that are that we need to agree on, and particularly the first five are the ones that are probably the most important that are listed here in the screen. String level issues, which I believe Carrie has a better definition than that, but I guess we can get to that in the next session, which will be about the definitions. These are the other set of issues that we have identified. I'm showing now on the screen, but we are going to get to those one by one if we have enough time. So the first one, string level issues. This refers to issues like considering synonyms, spelling alternatives, and other similar things, whether they are considered variants or not in the root. From the six reports, five of the teams said they should not be variants in the root or didn't say anything at all about this. So they didn't flag this as a variant issue. But there is one team, the Greek team, that identified string-level issues or one string-level issue as something they want to see as a variant, particularly, and Panagiotis, correct me if I'm saying something wrong here, they want to consider different spellings, two different forms of spelling as variants, the Demotic key and the... and I'm sorry, I forgot the name of the other spelling.
Cazarebusa.
Thank you. So, like I said, only the Greek team is considering string-level issues or this particular string-level issue as something to be considered as a variant. I would like to start the discussion on this. Should this be a variant issue in the root?
May I rephrase the question?
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry.
Yes, go ahead.
This is Vladimir. May I rephrase the question? Is it something that we necessarily want to see as a variant issue in the root? That means what happens if we do not treat Greek alternative spelling as variants in the root? Does that lead to unacceptable level of user confusion or any other detrimental consequences?
The issue of Καθαρέουσα and Δημοτική is two different forms of language. For example, the main port of Greece is called Piraeus, and this is the Δημοτική form, and the Καθαρέουσα form is Πειραιώς. It has different letters. And the idea was, if somebody want to apply for Piraeus, then Piraeus should be excluded. And if somebody want apply for Piraeus, then Piraeus should be excluded. We don't expect too many applications for Greek TLDs, and especially this kind of problem to have the Καθαρέουσα and Δημοτική problem in top level domains. So this was the idea, just to accept only the requested form of the word. I have to use again this thing. And just exclude the other one.
Samad, you next, and then Kerry. And Andrew, have you your hand up? Or are you? So, Samad.
Okay. So, when you say string level issues, I understand from it that any issue which refers to more than one character. If that's the case, we've actually been discussing many of these in the previous discussion as well, where you have, you know, multiple characters, some optional, some not optional. So we've actually, I think what I'm trying to ask is, could you redefine exactly what you mean with string level issues, and is there an overlap of this with our previous discussion, or is there something which you're intending to be clearly different from what our previous discussion has been?
Just quick intervention. This is different to what has previously presented by Andrew. Well, actually covers the last part, what Andrew called the linguistic variants, if I remember correctly. This refers to variants that had to do with the meaning of the string, not a particular number of characters that can be deterministically substituted. So these are different spellings of the same concept, I guess.
Before we continue, Kerry, if you don't mind, the call is now up. Do we have anybody on remote participation on the call?
There was not when I placed the call.
There's nobody yet on the call. Okay, I'll come back to that. Kerry, to you.
These cases are covered by existing process and procedure. The existence of .cat precludes .ca with an accent over it, T. And we don't need to pretend that there's any variant relationship here. The concept of variance in the root is going to make a lot of people very nervous. And I don't think we need to apply that rubric to a situation that is being managed already. And there are degrees of similarity that are immediately going to be recognized, with or without anything we say here. And in the root especially, I would have thought the degree of scrutiny is going to be pretty darned high already.
So, Gary, just to understand, are you saying that the current evaluation criteria for confusingly similar will address these?
No, I'm saying that what's been suggested so far in this session is covered by that. So are there any situations where we really truly need to talk about variant relationships between elements of the root zone, or are we simply trying to apply a more rigorous analytic terminology to something that's puttering away as best it's going to anyway?
Andrew, do you want to come in?
So there are two things. I'm going to do them in reverse order of what I intended. The second thing is that this question about strings and series of characters versus something else, it occurs to me why it is that I've been nervous about the calling the string level issues, and it's exactly that. That a string is just some series of code points, and it's sort of indeterminate whether it's got sort of any linguistic value or semantic value is, I guess, really what we should have called the other thing. What this amounts to is a question about semantic variance, right? That two things have the same meaning or the same use in various linguistic contexts, and therefore are they variants of one another? Because that's really what's going on here. The request that Katarabusa and Demotsuki be treated as variants of one another, even if one of them doesn't get delegated, is a request effectively that, based on the meaning of these two strings, that is to say, the semantics of them, we get two things that go together, which leads me, in fact, to my next question. I want to know why the Katharavusa Demotiki case is any different from color and color in English.
Yotis, do you want to address that?
This is the question for me to judge color and color.
So in the United States, you spell color C-O-L-O-R.
I know.
And in Britain, you spell it with a U. Mm-hmm. And in Canada, you spell it one way or the other, and you get to pick. So why isn't that a case that ought to be treated the same way as the Demotiki and Katharavusa case?
Look, as I said before, if one applies for color in the American way of writing, then our idea was to exclude the color in the English way of writing. So that is something that we believe a typical internet user would expect, because both of them are color. And even if the string is different one from the other, the typical user experience and common sense expects this to be the same. And I think that I can would like to be that way because of issues like phishing and things like this. So in our case, Demotiki and Katharavusa, it is the same. I mean, if somebody applies for Pirefs and Pireas, this would... This is the same city, the same port. This is something that the user expects to be the same. So, in order to protect the applicant and to protect the user and to facilitate the user, that's why we said one form. We don't choose for which form, and as the monotonic form is used, the monotonic characters are used. And so if somebody wants to apply for the Katharavusa version, okay, it is the Katharavusa version in the root. And this is going to be used as a new Greek TLD. And the other should be excluded. Now, I'm not... I would like to ask... this is, let's say, an issue of entering another string in the root as an allowed string, or it's just something that if somebody else in the future would like to apply for the other version of the word, then should be excluded because it is written in the application form that this is the form that we applied and this is the excluded form.
I have Kerry, Manal, Edmund, and Vladimir, and Sarmat. So, Kerry.
Three brief things. Okay. The first, the user expectation in the ASCII namespace is that color and color are two separate strings. Nobody expects that the one is going to be the other. So what do we migrate into the situation that we are talking about? Point one. Point two, spelling reforms, orthographic reforms of the kind that you're addressing here, take place all over the world. I mean, that I remember them in the years I've been around. If Harald Alvestrand was here, he would explain to you that there are two completely separate sets of orthographic rules applied in Norway for Norwegian, for the same reason. But there's a third one. I mean, the two of them are a compromise from a decision about what to do with the one of them that was obsoleted toward the end of the 19th century. So user expectation is one of the things that is massively dependent on local context. And you may very well have an understanding of the expectations of the Greek user community, but that does not scale into the root. That's two. Third, point of order. Are we trying to make root policy here, or are we trying to analyze the occurrence of variants in the scripts we were commissioned to study?
Let me not answer that question and take the other comments. Manal, first of all, you're next.
I'm just again trying to think out loud here. Are we dealing with two separate categories? I mean, some variants that we need to tie together or link together or bundle together, I mean, have them activated simultaneously, and others that we want mutually exclusive, I mean, because if I understand that currently there is some process in place that makes sure that applied for strings do not confuse with existing strings. So if this is, I mean, handled by the current process, then the mutual exclusivity is taken care of, and maybe we should look into things that we want to have simultaneously. I'm thinking out loud. I'm not sure.
My understanding, somebody can correct me, I'm sure, is that it's only visual similarity that is the evaluation criterion for TLDs. Anyway, I have a Edmund, you're next on the list.
Yeah, I was going to say exactly what Manal said, actually, you know, in terms of suggestion, and want to ask the question, in terms of confusingly similar, that's, you know, there is both the evaluation process and also the objection process. It's quite clear that if there's an existing TLD with one particular spelling, someone else that wants to come along and use the same spelling, the existing registry could file an objection. I think that, you know, I'm just curious whether that would suffice, because if I'm operating that registry, I would obviously object to the new guy coming in with a different spelling for the same word, right? So the question is really, is this really a variant issue in this sense, or whether, you know, the existing GTLD or even for CCTLD, actually existing processes could already take care of it by not allowing them to simultaneously be used in a way.
Vladimir.
I think we need to distinguish between two cases. First case, there are indeed semantic variants that string to multiple strings that have the same meaning. Second case is whether there is a request from some community that I can intervene into this situation and effectively restrict free trade. And in the situation to illustrate with color and color example, what I'm saying is that if one applicant gets .color with British spelling, do we think that another applicant can really come and request the color with a different spelling? And are we saying that in this situation this is what ICANN should block? The alternative solution here would be if the first applicant reserves both strings for itself, and in this scenario this can be implemented without any policy intervention from ICANN.
Thank you. Sarmad?
So I think there is an objection process, but I think there is a more fundamental question. And the question is, can color with the two spellings, both strings exist together? So suppose that there's a registry which takes color with English spellings, and the same registry applies for color for the American spellings. In that case, there is going to be no objection process. Would the two strings be allowed in the zone at the same time? And if they are allowed, could they possibly be pointing to different places? And if you can allow them to point to different places, then they're not variants. But if you think they must point to the same place, then they should be considered variants. And I'd like to think of it that way rather than go through an objection process kind of argument.
Would I get in? Talk to you.
Yes, this is what I was saying, that if a string slash word is applied in the form of the motiki, then the other form should be excluded unless the same registry applies for it too. But okay, this is something different because. But I mean, yes, we don't expect to overload the route with this kind of variants. But in our case, we should consider this issue as a variant issue for our language. That's why we said it in the report.
Thank you, Andrew.
I was arguing earlier today that in order to have an operational definition of variant, we had to have all the necessary and sufficient conditions for two things to be considered variants of one another. The argument that we're pursuing right now says that what you do is you get all of the dictionaries in the universe and you find all of the cases in which, for a given dictionary, two different words mean the same thing, and then you find those cases and you check them every time a registration happens in the root. That's the policy that we have to adopt in order to make this an algorithmic possibility. Because it cannot be only for Greek, because the immediate question is, well, why not for English? And, of course, you went right down that path and said, no, they can't have both. They have to pick one or the other. Okay, then why not for Russian? Why not for... And then I can pick every single language you like in the universe, and I have to have that. Now, suppose that next year the wildest dreams of the expansionists for the root are satisfied, and we get 10,000 new TLDs. So we have 10,000... The root zone is now 10,000 large. At that point, it is no longer realistic to do these things one at a time, right? I mean, effectively what you've got there is a system that has to be automated because you just can't run it that way by hand. Well, if we've got that many, then we have to have an algorithm that's going to, we process new applications through. And that does mean that we have to have every dictionary in the world. Personally, I don't think that's going to work. Moreover, I would say that this is not the same kind of problem as the other issues that we were talking about. This may be a serious issue. I'm not trying to pretend that it's not a serious issue. I think it is a serious issue. But I want to distinguish between this problem and the kinds of problems that happen because of the effects of opening the registration possibility in the root from effectively 37 characters to effectively 10,000, which is the other kinds of problems that we were talking about earlier today. Those have to do with what happens with individual characters or sets of characters, strings in the strict sense. Whereas this has to do with semantics and how people are going to use those characters as words. And I'm very, very nervous about going down this line, because the next thing that you're going to have to do is get agreement on which dictionary to use. And I am pretty sure that there are people who, from the Cyrillic community, for instance, who would be more than happy to entertain you with the politics of picking whose dictionary gets to decide. That's a nasty problem.
Carrie, you're next.
Isn't all of this moot? We can expect to see established registries requesting synonymous, allosemic, whatever you want to call it, equivalents to their current strings. And as long as they're treating these things as separate delegations, separate applications, we're not using the word that we're not supposed to be using at all, that we have this string, and here's 185,000 bucks, we want that one, and here's another 185, we want that, unless you guys are prepared to do a bulk deal on the price side. And we're not talking about any form of tandem operation whatsoever. We have applied for these strings, thank you. And exactly as Sarmad says, if it is absolutely clear that all aspects of conceptual and linguistic, not really ownership, but close enough to it, are met, that, okay, take dot museum, that's a lexeme, okay? If we wanted to apply for a half a dozen other versions of the lexeme, museum, or some other entities that we thought were pretty good guys to operate the thing, applied for the same, nobody would raise an eyebrow. And we're now talking about some policy, if not algorithmic, block to that. Why?
Andrew.
So there is a legitimate, I don't want to dismiss this as an important problem, because there is a really serious problem here. Suppose that somebody gets somebody applies for and receives a delegation for a label, and that label corresponds to a word in Greek that is spelled in the demotiki way. Okay, if somebody else comes along and applies for a string that corresponds to the same word spelled in the Katerebusa way, then there is a problem, because there is nothing about those two strings that links them. And the argument here is that they should be linked to one another in exactly the same way that several of us think that the cough and swash cough case need to be linked together, that one of them is blocked or one of them is also delegated, or that some of us think the Chinese, traditional Chinese and simplified Chinese cases, they ought to go to the same people. They ought to be linked somehow. And the reason they ought to be linked somehow is because every single competent user of the language is going to regard those as being the same thing. Or in the other case, a significant portion of the competent users of that script are going to think it's the same thing. So the argument here is that every single competent speaker of Greek is going to see those two labels and immediately say, those are the same. And so we are at the top of a slippery slope. What I am arguing is that the semantic equivalence is too far down. We're just going to slide right through then. Because the next thing that will happen is exactly what you alluded to but didn't come out and say, and that is, what are the synonyms of calm? It's not a word in any language, and yet I am sure that there are people probably somewhere in this hotel who will make the argument strongly that there are such synonyms and they know what they are.
And you can be equally certain that they're talking about with VeriSign about this very thing. Yeah. Again, what attribute of this problem, which I'm perfectly prepared to recognize as a problem of significant scope, are we going to be able to render tractable algorithmically that isn't already embraced by the established evaluation procedure?
Well, wait. Now, there are two possible answers to that. One is, well, we can't do the algorithm, and therefore that's a reductio argument against my position earlier that we need an algorithmic answer here. So one possibility, I mean, one result of deciding that this is a variant is that variants are not amenable to algorithmic processing. And if we want to buy that, if we want to buy that conclusion, then we are in, I think, very deep water here.
We started this whole discussion talking about exactly that on a code point by code point basis for the reasons you're now elaborating on, and we expanded this to a label by label thing, which means we do need to revisit the initial precept.
But wait a minute. The previous discussions that we were having, we were coming up with conditions by which we can determine whether two code points or sets of code points are substitutable for one another. That is something that I can write a program for. You know, you can write it in Perl, and you can do it in a few hours once you've got the things nailed down. It's a maybe complicated thing, and probably the specification is complicated, but it's trick. But you can do that. This has exactly one answer, and that is find all of the legitimate dictionaries. And the very next problem you have is as soon as the dictionaries change, you've got to go back and reevaluate all of your criteria. I mean, this really does require that you import all of human history in order to get it right. It's just a massive problem. So that is the reason I want to argue that if we are going to be principled about this, even though I understand the problem for Greek, it feels to me like a kind of thing that really, really gets you in deep trouble. So if you want to make this argument hard, I think that I would be forced to argue, in that case, variants are not amenable to automatic processing. And if there is a variant problem that has to be handled in the root, then the root is automatically constrained in the size that it can effectively grow to.
So, Edmund, you were next on my list.
Yeah, I very much agree with what Andrew just said, and I just want to add, I guess, one more angle to it, I guess a question to Dennis as well. In terms of the charter, I guess, of the VIP, are we focusing on IDN issues? And if we come across an issue which is not pertinent specifically to IDN, which is what we're talking about right now, because it has implications to ASCII names as well. In those cases, can we consider it out of scope because we need a bigger PDP or, you know, a bigger process than an IDN variance issues project?
Thank you, Edmund. I'm going to go there in a minute. Panagiotis.
Yes. I would like to say some things. First of all, is that I believe that for the... Let's begin from another point. One could say in the procedure that if an applicant for a Greek TLD, an applicant for a Greek TLD should provide also the other form of this label word in order for this to be excluded. First. Second is that I believe that different rules should apply at the end for different scripts. You cannot put them all together. Third is that you will have the early warning system for the GTLDs and the IDN TLDs also. And this could solve us a lot of problems, the early warning. And the third is that, okay, if you want to make a completely 100% automatic system to check each label and things like this, I understand that you cannot load to this system all the dictionaries of all the languages, etc. But if for an application of a word where the applicant can give the other form of the word and in order to be excluded, so you cannot overload the root, then this application can be addressed to an expert. The cost of $185,000 is very much. An expert can say that a next Greek application, is it the Δημοτική or Καθαρέβουσα form of an existing Greek TLD application or not? Domain name. Is it? Yes, it is. So it's excluded. Is it not? Okay. You can continue. It's not that difficult, I think. If we try to put everything into a algorithmic machinery automated system, yes, of course you will create some problems. But if we use the principle that each script has its own rules, and we can use common sense, then we don't have any problem, I believe.
Okay, I think we spent enough time on this particular point. My own view, for what it's worth, is that one of the underlying assumptions, and I think we need to make this explicit, as Andrew has done, is that there is a mechanical or operational process for determining what are variants, not an interpretation or semantic. And this is not to say that this isn't an important issue for Greek, but I think we should highlight it as an important issue that's outside the scope of the ID invariant project as currently constructed. So there may well be a solution, because there may well be for the Greek case that this particular set of ways of writing the language are well bounded, and there's another process for doing it. But I don't think, I think a fundamental assumption is this mechanical or operational process, because if the root is to scale to n, where n is a large number, you have to have some operational mechanical process for evaluating things. Otherwise it becomes politics and dangerous. That's not to say it isn't an important problem, and I think we should highlight it as an important problem. But I don't think, and I think the discussion, but that's my opinion, and I don't want to because I'm sharing, I don't think it's within the scope of the ID invariant project, but I think it's an important issue for Greek, and I'd like to leave it at that at this point, because I think we find there are other important issues similarly for other script languages. Is that a satisfactory way of moving forward? I mean, I'm sorry, but I shouldn't be doing this as chair, but that's my suggestion to move the discussion forward. Samet.
Just a short comment. So I would suggest that we break this down instead of lumping it all in a string level issue and make synonym a separate issue, spelling alternatives a special issue, and identify all other similar issues at string level, and then analyze each issue for each language to ensure that if we can identify for a particular script a particular category which may qualify as a variant issue, we can include that. And if we think after that analysis that they're not variant issues, I'm just a little uncomfortable not really going to that level of analysis and just lumping it together and saying it's not a variant issue.
I think that's a very fair response. So that's a piece of work that needs to be done by the coordination team now over the next while. I think that's a reasonable recommendation. Francisco, do you want to pick up now, because
yes,
we need to move on.
Just quickly on what you said. I'm not sure if I understand correctly. Did you say do analysis on language base, every single language?
So what I was suggesting, so there's an ETC here, so I'm not really sure what ETC means. So what I'm trying to say is that, like in the previous session, there are categories of issues, and then each category, there are specific examples from each language. So we also divide this into very clearly articulated categories, whatever those. So are there just these two categories, or there are five categories, or how many categories there are? And then for each category, we can look at language-wise and see whether there is any relevant variant kind of discussion there, or it's out of scope. But we do that analysis before we close it. That's what I was suggesting.
Yes, very quickly. So we're talking here semantic issues or string level issues? I mean, because semantic...
I think that's exactly what Samet has asked us to do, is to tease this out a little bit more into separate categories. I think that's the work that needs to be done. Am I interpreting you correctly?
Yeah, it's a lot of things sort of...
Fine. Panagiotis.
Just, I suggest we can leave it open for the time being, and we can discuss it again in the mailing list. Okay.
Francisco, next point.
Sure. The next issue which is related to this and other character level variants that were already
we have a keystone.
So some reports identify the need for a solution to treat two or more names as one. Correct me if I'm wrong, that would be something probably for the Arabic. No? I thought there were, well, at least on the Chinese, simplified and traditional.
No?
We have this discussion in our group quite extensively, and we have repeated it, and I think we have a very strong discussion, heavy discussion with Steve, that says that the Chinese do not want to have D names or aliasing. We prefer parallel provisioning.
Right, that's what this is referring to, alternate names. So let me finish how this name came. So in the Cyrillic team, there was this discussion in Paris, and initially we have the term name aliasing, and then Andrew pointed out that was a specific term defined in, I don't remember if this was an RFC thing.
Yeah, it starts in 2181, so it's an old RFC to boot.
Okay. So this is a already defined term, name aliasing. So we had to find another term to refer to the idea of having two names to point to the same one, no matter what the technology is being used or policy is being used to do that.
We went through that again. We do not want to point to the same IP address.
Okay, let's just tease these out. You're asking, Francisco, you're trying to define a new name for aliasing, or a word that expresses right. The concept of multiple variants being delegated such that they, when queried, the DNS provides the same response.
Sorry, it's important to say it's not providing the same response.
Sorry. This is what Francisco is talking about. In the Chinese case, we now understand that that's not what you want, but we're talking about six case studies here.
Okay.
So we're trying to find a word to describe the idea that multiple names will be alternatives of one another. This is the name that's proposed. So when any of them is looked up, the DNS will give the same response. We've heard that this is definitely not what is not required by the Chinese, but it appears to be something. I'm trying to interpret what you say. So back to you, Francisco.
And just to put a tiny clarification on that, that's modulo the normal loose consistency constraints. So we're going to exclude from this, you know, making sure that all caches in the world agree and things like that. Well, yeah, I mean, you nod as though that's self-evident, but it hasn't been always, so...
It is now self-evident to me, having thought about it for a long time and having received instruction. Sarma, do you... and then Edmund.
So I'm probably then misunderstood this initially. If you're talking about D-name kind of things, V and variants pointing to the same place, this is something which is requested from the Arabic case study team, but we've not been using it in this terminology. This is the first time I'm seeing the terminology, so that's probably the confusion.
So this terminology is on the Cyrillic report, and the idea is that it refers to D name, parallel provisioning, or any other form that could be devised to have two names to point to the same thing. So this is something that is on the Arabic report. Now I understand on the Chinese case, you don't want them to point to the same place. So I would say that's normal provisioning.
Let me try to clarify a little why the Chinese have this position, which I understand may be a bit different from the other language group. We have traditional and we have simplified characters. So we foresee that user would type in either traditional or simplified. In theory, they should supposed to go to the same page. But in reality, because
we know that the user uses different character set. We may point them to different IP addresses, one serving the traditional website of the same content and the other one pointing to the simplified version of the content. So it's pretty much like google.com, and depending where you come from, it goes to different home pages. So we hesitate to use the words the same IP address, but we agree that it should point to the same registrant. The registrant will decide whether it goes to the same page or different page, but it should go to the same registrant, just not the same IP address.
Okay. That, of course, is moving into the solution space, but it probably is important to clarify that. Edmund, did you want to come in?
Yeah, I think it's. I want to understand what you're trying to drive at, because to me, having a DNAME and having what James mentioned as parallel provisioning is really, you know, having the same, maybe same set of NS records and, you know, to the same registrant. They are very different, I keep hearing that the DNS have the same response. That's still fine too. You know, even if you have two sets of NS delegations and those NS is exactly the same, at the root level, you would get back exactly the same DNS response, right? But what I want to get a sense of is, are we talking about, you know, same response through the tree, you know, as we go down? Because those are very different things.
Yeah. Good point. So I guess we need to work more on this.
Kerry, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I mean, I think an awful lot is expected of the DNS and all of this. I mean, regardless of the models that we're considering here, you're still going to end up in a situation where user expectation is met by the local configuration of whatever daemon it is that is being invoked. So if you're going to be sending email someplace, it's the person who's configured the recipient host that decides what happens, and whoever configures the HTTP server similarly decides what happens. So user expectation is not met by the DNS. There's this huge application layer in between.
Andrew.
As soon as we get into this area where I know a little bit, because most of the time we're talking in a place where I don't. I want to make a couple of things clear. The first thing is that the point of this alternate names discussion is, in fact, to send things down the tree the same, because that is a notion that people have been using, and they've been playing a little bit with this alternate, or they're playing a little bit with this aliasing term and not being particularly clear. And so the point of introducing a new term was to get away from tripping over the fact that aliasing is actually well defined for the DNS. It's CNAME or DNAME and nothing else right now. And then also to get a term that allowed us to refer to that same effect without necessarily using the same implementation. So the effect here is that the tree is the same, but the implementation need not be via CNAME or DNAME or some other aliasing in the DNS thing. Like maybe, for instance, there is the shadow zone stuff, which effectively causes the same things to appear in the DNS, and it's a provisioning trick that is outside of the registry. Or we've got other kinds of tricks. So there's a lot of different possibilities. That's the point of this term. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on that except to state that that's very, very clearly that. And the second thing I want to say is, while I agree with everything that Kerry said about the stack and so on, we need to disambiguate these things, and therefore we need to have terms like this. The question now that Francisco is asking is, does anybody actually need this thing? And if the answer is yes, then I think it's an issue for us and we need to include it.
Yes, as a clarification, there were discussions in our team, and this non-existing term for non-existing technology, but since we created, our team members created this like imaginary case when it worked through the tree. And we were using, actually, the Ukrainians was trying to utilize it for their needs. So we created this term and this idea. Since idea appears, we just want to name it. And if it's not in use yet, it's fine that we have a name.
Thank you. I think I understand. Edmund?
Based on Andrew's clarification, I completely support having, you know, a term for it. And I think we have one section we are talking about terminology. This should be definitely one of the things that we should include. But I was worrying that the alternate names is the term, so I got confused. So maybe.
But I understand the Chinese case do not need this.
That doesn't really matter because, you know, even if one of the languages need this case, then it's still one of the issues and still one of the terminology that we need to deal with, I guess.
Let me explain a little. When I read this, I misread it a bit, so I read it a little bit wrong. Let me apologize. I don't think we need a dename solution or a licensing solution, but I think the point about having a delegation method that allows variant to be delegated is needed, whether it's para-provisioning, whether it's dename for Arabic, para-provisioning for Chinese or whatever for different languages, that this scope is definitely within the scope of the work. But we should not narrow it ourselves to only one solution.
And Francisco, I understand that that's the point of this, that this is an umbrella term that we might use to look at user expectations, irrespective of how the implementation is done behind the scenes. Yeah? So here's a user would expect that these two names, which are variants, would behave, would be alternatives of one another in some sense. And this is a general term to categorize, to catch that idea. Okay.
Yes, correct. And by the way, also in the Greek report, they are raising the need for this. So it's the Greek, the Arabic, and I now not completely clear about the Chinese, but at least two for sure need a concept like this.
Okay, let's move on from that. It's an interesting discussion, but we've got more stuff, I think, that you want to cover. Edmund, we'll come back to it. We now have 4 minutes left in this session, so I want to move on.
So the next concept I would like to talk about a little bit is something that appears on a number of the reports, the need for to have a list of the valid code points per script that will be allowed on the route. So I guess the first question is, do we have consensus on the need for this?
I think so. I see lots of heads nodding. I think we have consensus on this, that this is a basic requirement. Does anybody say that it's not a basic requirement? No, we have consensus around this table. Oh, no. Patrick?
So it's Patrick Jones. I just want to ask a question, and you can park it and come back to it later. How would this match up with the current requirement that a IDN registry supply their table of code points to ICANN? And would this replace that, complement it? There's probably some more work that could be done. Sarmad?
A very good question. Sarmad?
So an associated point. So from this, I understand that we are actually talking about a single table for the root zone. One of
per
the
script.
Things, sorry?
Per script.
Per script, yes. This is some of the one thing which we've also been discussing. In the Arabic script community, there's been a general consensus that whatever policy we request for GTLDs, it should be the same policy for CCTLDs. Though we've been working on GTLD perspective,
But this is something which we wanted to bring to the larger group as well, and I'm just taking the opportunity to raise this now here, whether there should be a single table for CCTLDs and GTLDs, one common policy at the root zone, or is there a possibility of having different versions?
Well, this question that you're posing, Francisco, isn't this... This is the code points, not the so-called language table or validation methodology.
So one of the things that at least to me seems to be